Right, so we're, I'm not going to even, I'm just going to go over the text because we're going to be on this verse for a couple of weeks, so, or at least another few days. So I'll just read this is Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, most confidential knowledge, text number 2. Does everyone memorize this verse yet, or we should go over it again? Do you know it, Gadadhara? Okay, we'll go over it again. Right, so this text too. Rajavidya Rajguyam Pavitramidam Uttamam Pravakshavagamam Dharmam Susukam Kartum Aviyam Rajavidya, the king of education. Rajaguyam, the king of confidential knowledge. Pavitram, the purest. Idam, this. Uttamam, transcendental. Pravaksha, pratyaksha, by direct experience. Agamam, understood. Dharmyam, the principal religion. Susukam, very happy. Kartum, to execute. Avyayam, everlasting. Translation purport, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets, is the purest knowledge, because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, is the perfection of religion, is everlasting, and is joyfully performed. I think I got up to... Do we read this knowledge as the purest form of all activities? It's explained in the Vedic literature. In the Padma Purana, man's sinful activities have been analyzed, are shown to be the results of sin after sin. Those who are engaged in fruitive activities are entangled in different stages and forms of sinful reactions. For example, when a seed of a particular tree is sown, the tree does not appear immediately to grow. It takes some time. It is first a small sprouting plant, then it assumes the form of a tree, then it flowers and bears fruit. Then when it is complete, the flowers and fruits are enjoyed by persons who have sown the seeds of the tree. Similarly, man performs a sinful act, and like a seed, it takes time to fructify. There are different stages. The sinful action may have already stopped within the individual, but the results of the fruits of that sinful action are still to be enjoyed. There are sins which are in the form of a seed. There are others which are simply already fructified, and they're giving us fruit, which are enjoying as distress and pain. Does everyone know what all the different stages of sin are? Is anyone here taking the Bhakti Shastri course? Bija, Kuta, and Papa. And we'll let you keep your Bhakti Shastri degree. Yeah, so everything starts with avidya. Did you take Bhakti Shastri? Did you take Bhakti Shastri too? Okay. So everything starts with avidya, which is ignorance. Oh, that's right. Jagat Purush was here for, he must have taken everything, all those courses. So everything begins with ignorance. That is, we don't know what's going on. And then worse than that, we think we know what's going on. It's bad enough to be in ignorance, but then we're asmita, we're in illusion that we're this body. So we don't know who we are, but we think we're something that we're not. And then begins... Well, that's due to illusion and ignorance. And then we come to the stage of rag and dvesha, which is attachment and aversion. So from ignorance comes sinful desires, papam. And from sinful desires come sinful activities, some of which are manifested, and they're known as prarabdha karma, which are the what we're going through right now. We think we're having a great time, but actually we're just suffering the reactions of our sinful activities. But of course we have good sinful reactions, so we don't mind. We suffer blissfully. And then there's aparabdha. There's all kinds of sinful reactions that are waiting in the future. And then whatever our sinful reactions are experiencing in the present, we have this kuta, this inclination towards sinful activity. Even though we're suffering now, when we're faced in the future with different allurements, we have the tendency to, well, we have dormant within our heart this tendency to do sinful activities. And when we do that, that increases sinful desire, and then we're back to papam again. As the sinful desire increases, then we have a tendency to manifest sinful reactions. And that more of that gets stored up as aparabdha karma, and that produces more tendency towards sinful activity, which produces more material sinful desires, and the cycle goes on. So in the material world, as it says, you can't win and you can't break even. Figure out what happens. Everyone loses here. But we're having a great time, so don't worry about it. It's only going to get better. As explained in the 28th verse of the 7th chapter, a person who has completely ended the reactions of all sinful activities and is fully engaged in pious activities, being freed from the duality of this material world, becomes engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, those who are actually engaged in the devotional service of the Lord are already freed from all reactions. This statement is confirmed in the Padma Purana. Aparabdha palam papam kutam bijam pala palonmukam kramenaiva paliyeta Vishnu bhakta ratatmanaham. For those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all sinful reactions, whether fructified in the stock or in the form of a seed, gradually vanish. Therefore, the purifying potency of devotional service is very strong, and it's called pavitram uttamam, the purest. Uttama means transcendental. Tamas means this material world of darkness. And uttama means that which is transcendental to material activities. Devotional activities are never to be considered material, although sometimes it appears that devotees are engaged like ordinary men. One who can see and is familiar with devotional service will know that they are not material activities. They are all spiritual and devotional, uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. So there are three stages of devotional service. One is actual devotional service. That is pure devotional service. And then we have devotional, ordinary devotional service, which is mixed with calm, karma, and jnana. When it's mixed with karma, then we accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the proprietor of everything. If we don't accept that, then it's not karma, Mishra Karma Yoga, it's Vikarma. So our first business is we have to accept everything belongs to Krishna. Otherwise, we're acting in the material, we're acting in karmic activities. It's not even pious, actually. The karma yogis in the Vedic culture, they do dutiful activity, but the dutiful activity is not because they're going to, you know, they're going to get paid for it. Therefore, they act out of duty. They do it because karma yoga means they do it because their duty under Krishna's directions. They know Krishna's a proprietor, and therefore they do their activities, their duties. Then when one knows that Krishna is not only the proprietor, but finds out what Krishna wants one to do and then does that, that's called Jnana Yoga. That's further purification. One is purification of activities, the other is the purification of intelligence, knowledge. And finally, this is the purification of consciousness, of the soul. There's a change of determination of the soul at the stage when he knows what to do and he does it to please Krishna. Then the soul is positively active. Otherwise, activities, dutiful activities of this body, or knowing what to do with the body is all on the bodily platform. But to do something to please Krishna, that's on the spiritual platform. That's called pure devotional service. And we can practice that even in conditioned life. We don't have to wait till we become pure devotees before we practice pure devotional service, because then we'll never become pure devotees. It won't be possible to become a pure devotee. So we have to practice devotional service while we're in conditioned life. But there's three stages. Accept everything belongs to Krishna, find out what Krishna wants us to do with his energy, and then do it to please him. And that's called pure devotional service. And then, what will be the result of pure devotional service? Does anyone know? How do we become happy? Yeah. Why do we become happy? Okay, how do we know Krishna is pleased? Oh, okay, so the spiritual master becomes happy. No, what is actually what makes us happy? What's the thing that makes us happy? Why by performing pure devotional service to become happy? What is that? Okay, but that would make us happy. Make us less suffering. What's that?
We water the root.
Probably the plant will become happy. No, I understand what you mean, but yes. Well, you keep on going on, you'll hit it eventually. Say enough things of it. No, the point is that if we accept everything belongs to Krishna, we find out what Krishna wants us to do, and we do it to please him, and we do it to please him, then automatically we'll remember Krishna. And remembering Krishna means that to the extent and to the consistency that we remember Krishna, to different degrees we can actually experience Krishna. Just like the closer you get to the sun, the more you can feel its heat and light, experience its heat and light. So the more we become absorbed in Krishna consciousness, the more we experience the bliss. And the Ladini, Krishna is emanating Ladini Shakti, spiritual pleasure. And the closer we get to Krishna, the more we remember Krishna, the more intensively, and the more consistently we remember Krishna, then the more we enter into Krishna consciousness, the more we experience transcendental pleasure, and it's that Ladini Shakti that burns away the material contamination. So when we're blissful, then when we experience from being Krishna conscious, from following the process of becoming Krishna conscious, then our tendency towards sin is washed away by the higher taste. The higher taste is the bliss of Krishna consciousness, being conscious of Krishna. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita bhati. The concentration of the mind upon Krishna bhati, Krishna bhakti rasa, gives one the Krishna rasa, the bliss of being conscious of Krishna. Or the focusing one's mind upon Krishna and giving one's love to Krishna, it's called Krishna consciousness, according to the Prabhupada's purport in the Krishna book. By concentration in the mind upon Krishna, one can know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahman realization and local Paramatma realization are not full knowledge, not full knowledge, let's see. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul, capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yoga. At the end of the sixth chapter, it's clearly stated that the concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth in full, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahman realization, localized Paramatma realization, are not full knowledge of the absolute truth, because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is the absolute truth in full, but not otherwise. So, that's the message of Bhagavad Gita. Concentrate the mind upon Krishna through the process of devotional service. Kamsa concentrated his mind upon Krishna, but out of fear. Shushupala out of envy. Others concentrated, the gopis out of love, the Vrishnis out of parental relationship, Narada Muni out of respect. So all of them concentrated their minds, but not all of them are considered to be pure devotional service, because they don't accept the process. The process is we work for Krishna, we think about Krishna, we see things in relation to Krishna, we try to love Krishna. That's the process. And if we try to love Krishna, then Krishna reveals himself, because he already loves us, he just wants to reveal. When he sees that we're trying to love him or please him, then he reveals himself. And what's pleasing to Krishna? Does anyone know? What pleases Krishna? Okay. So when we please his devotees. And what pleases his devotees? Because like one devotee told me, there was one sannyasi, he used to come over and visit him. And he liked to go to the movies. So in order to please him, he went to the movies with him. So is that how we please the devotees? How do we please the devotees? Yes.
To serve a devotee according to his material condition, nature, and his spiritual progress.
Wow, that can get you into a lot of trouble. Serve him according to his condition, nature. Well, what is my condition, nature? I like to go to the movies. I like to play football, soccer. Anyhow, we won't get into that. We like so many things. So, how do we know what serving to Krishna is? Well, there are nine. Hopefully, we believe that devotees and everyone else would be happy if they become Krishna conscious. So we help them become Krishna conscious. That's how we please the devotees. If we want to please them according to some whimsical idea, that will not be actually pleasing to them, and it won't be pleasing to us. Unless we accept that the only source of real happiness is Krishna, then we'll get lost in the material existence, trying to so-called be nice to people. Any questions? I've been asking a lot of questions. Anyone have a question?
Hare Krishna. I just want to make sure if I understood correctly, at least theoretically. Do we need to develop an attachment to the higher state, to the higher taste, rather to work on washing away sinful activities?
We don't wash away any sinful activities. Krishna washes away the sinful activities. Okay. Unless we do what's necessary to become Krishna conscious. Now, Krishna is Paramatma in everyone's heart. He knows For instance, he gives us the intelligence which mode of nature to choose. The more sinful people are, then the more they get entangled in the modes of nature. The less sinful they are, the more they follow Krishna's directions, the more they come to the higher modes. So that's our choice, in one sense, which mode of material nature we're developing. So that we can say the soul is responsible, although the soul can't do anything independently, because Krishna is always has to arrange whatever we're doing, either through his spiritual energy or through his material energy. In this world, we're not doing anything. We're just desiring. But ultimately, when we desire to please Krishna in Krishna consciousness, then when Krishna reveals himself, then all the sinful desires, or as it says here, because it's right, it's papam, parabdha, aparabdha, kutam, avidya, they're all destroyed gradually by pure devotional service. By other activities, we can get relieved from, for instance, the tendency to do sinful activities just by tolerating the reactions. But only when we become Krishna conscious is avidya destroyed, which is the root cause. And when the avidya is destroyed, then naturally these other things gradually dissipate also. We're not in ignorance, we know who we are. We're not going to be attracted by sinful desires so easily. And especially if we actually, the more we experience Krishna and what it's like to be in Krishna consciousness, because Krishna consciousness is not just, well, there's Krishna, how blissful. Everything becomes blissful. Everything becomes pleasurable. Not just Krishna is the source of all pleasure, but everything in relation to Krishna is pleasurable too. It's not that we're in the spiritual world and there's the lotus flowers, there's the kandamba tree, there's the peacock, and then there's Krishna, and they would say, hey, would you get out of the way? I've got to see Krishna. No, they're all pleasurable. They're all blissful. They're all loving. We have a relationship with everyone in the material, in the spiritual world, out of pure love and affection. And then, although it sometimes seems that Chandravali's camp and Radharani's camp were seemingly antagonistic to each other, but they're actually not really antagonistic. They help each other because they make the relationship between Radha and Krishna sweeter by creating some kind of obstacle for Radha and Krishna to meet with each other or something. Makes the relationship sweeter. Besides that, Chandravali and Radharani are sisters, so sisters always fight with each other. But that fight is spiritual. There everything is blissful. So here, even though when we become Krishna conscious, everyone will seem like they're made out of, they will be tasteful. Every relationship will be tasteful. And everything here, all this energy will turn into Krishna's energy, and it'll all be pleasurable. It won't be different from Krishna to us. But we may have a little ways to go before that happens. But we should understand that we're living in the spiritual world, but our consciousness is something different, that's all. We're not trying, we don't have to change anything here. We just have to change our consciousness. Everything is already perfect, except for our consciousness. Okay, anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Ashwin, you mentioned Jiva and Hladini Shakti. In the spiritual world, say that we are Hyasvarupa and we are Sachidananda as Krishna, but in smaller proportion. How the bliss and the happiness of Jiva is related to Hladini Shakti?
Well, we're made out of Hladini Shakti also.
Jiva as a marginal.
We're marginal because of our desire. Not because of our constitution. We're always the same. We've never changed. We're always made of bliss, knowledge, and eternity. We're all, our body is made out of Ladini Shakti, of bliss. And our consciousness is Sat, is Chit. And we're eternal. we're not going to become anything. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, Sarukabinoi, Shavanadi, Shudachite, Koryo Udoi. We don't change who we are, we just realize who we are, that's all.
So Jiva Shakti is made of Kladini Shakti also?
Yeah, of course. What do you think we're made of, mud or grass?
No, because when is the categorization of the Shaktis, internal, external, and Jiva Shakti is like a three categories.
No, we're made out of blue. We're the same quality as Krishna, but in small quantity. That's why we're called Jiva, only because we have a tendency to put our consciousness in the wrong place. It's our consciousness that we put in the place. Not the soul doesn't change. Now there's Shakti Tattva and there's Jiva Tattva. The difference between Shakti Tattva and Jiva Tattva is Shakti Tattva doesn't put their consciousness in anything but Krishna. But the Jiva Tattva can put it, is marginal. But it doesn't change, it still made it. Everything that's conscious, it's not that we're just conscious and eternal, but we're not by nature blissful and full of but we're not by nature blissful. We're already trying to be blissful. That's why we're trying to get pleasure here, because that's our nature.
So we are. Kadini Shakti is also part of Jiva Shakti, basically.
That's who we are. We're made out of bliss. How could we be made of anything? If we're the same nature as Krishna, you know, then how could we be not be made out of bliss? We're just here. We're trying to experience our blissfulness in different ways, but it's just causing us misery. We know we're conscious, that's obvious. We know we're eternal, and we also know we're by nature we're blissful. That's where we're looking for it here, to experience the bliss of being blissful.
Srimati Rani is the embodiment of that Kladini Shakti.
Yeah, well, she's the whole Kladini Shakti.
We have part of that.
Yeah. We're expansions of it. Otherwise, what would we do in the spiritual world? You know, sit around looking morose. No, we're, to be in the spiritual world means we have to have the same nature as everyone else in the spiritual world. And they're all just different varieties of pleasure. Love. It's just all one big loving relationship going on there. That's why the whole thing here is just an imitation. Just that's all that people talk about. Love and freedom and this. But that's all. Just it's a reflection of the real love and freedom. Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.